The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Warning. This episode contains foul language, some yelling, and very little coronavirus talk. You're welcome.
The podcast for all things strange, unusual, paranormal, supernatural, creepy, sticky, gross, scary, and everything in between. Each week, we get to sit down with a friend and talk about something weird. At least that's how our lives used to be. But now, we're living in a post-apocalyptic wasteland of Netflix, Clorox wipes, and absolutely no toilet paper. My name is Ashley, and this is my co-host for today, Mr. Ashley Cassidy himself, Handsome Joe.
Hey, hey, hey.
Future
Mrs. Cassidy.
Mrs. Cassidy. Mr. Cassidy.
I'm not still a free agent, but talks are ongoing. Mm-hmm. We'll put it that way. Nothing's written in blood just yet.
No.
You still got plenty of time to screw this up.
Here's the thing. We're on day 10?
12.
12 of isolation?
Yeah.
No. Yep.
No.
No. 10.
10.
Today's 10.
Today's day 10.
Today's day 10 of isolation, so... there's no telling.
There really isn't.
If the engagement will last.
We're doing fine. Just to give you at home a status update, we're doing great. Mm-hmm. You know, couple bumps.
Couple bumps in the road.
To be expected.
Yeah. So we're going to, as a show, I don't know if you guys caught this. I did my first Instagram live.
Woo-woo!
On Friday or Saturday.
Getting them likes.
Yep. And I basically addressed this there. Keep It Weird is going to continue producing content for you throughout this whole thing.
Keep It Weird. Don't stop.
For as long as we can, at least. As long as the lights are on and the world's still turning, we're going to be recording episodes for you. It just might not be our regularly scheduled programming because Lauren and I are quarantined separately and on opposite sides of the city.
And it's a big city.
And it's a big city. We are working on getting her a microphone so we can record over the phone, but Amazon is not delivering right now, which is something I never thought I would say in my entire life.
No, to be fair, Jeff Bezos doesn't have that much money.
True.
Jeff Bezos has $60,000, maybe $70,000 in his checking account.
Okay, well, maybe his in United States checking account.
Yeah, no, oh,
offshore.
Caymans?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, then he's the richest person who's ever lived, literally. It's him and Massa Musa, the two richest people who have ever lived.
Is that the African king?
Yeah, it is.
From that Drunk History episode that we like so much?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. I was thinking more of
the Jewels.
Learning it in school.
Oh.
But, you know, sure.
Didn't Run the Jewels use it in one of their lyrics?
They sure as hell did.
They're very cool guys.
My man, Killer Mike. My other man, LP.
So Amazon's not delivering right now, so we're going to be playing it by ear week to week. If there's anything special that you'd like us to cover over the course of our isolation, please write in and let us know. We could use all the help we can get.
I don't know if we have enough time, though. I've got a very busy schedule these days. I thought that this break from life was really going to usher in, like, I'm going to clean my car, going to clean the house. Mm-hmm. Instead, my bathing has decreased by, I would say, a solid 33%. Now, to be fair, I am also not working up a sweat in quite the same way that I usually do.
Uh-huh.
I'm in a form of stasis, if you will.
I'm
in, like, pseudo hibernation these days. So the need isn't quite so great. But at the same time, for someone who typically is so fastidious in their self-grooming, it has been a noticeable change. by like midday yesterday, your birthday of all days, I felt like I was working on a pretty good rind on my skin.
That's gross.
So it was time to get some scrubbing going on there.
Well, also, I thought the same thing. I was like, okay, like, no big deal. We're going to be in isolation for a while. Let's clean everything. I'm going to deep clean. We can't. We can't afford to lose the paper towels.
Paper towels and disinfectant have literally never been in shorter supply or more expensive. The closest store to us now, it's just like a corner store. It's like a market. They sell beer and liquor and Doritos and condoms and, you know, like rolling papers. It's one of those places.
And those weird like Mexican candies.
Yeah, Mexican candies. Or like if you want like a plain white t-shirt or like a bandana, you've got those. It's one of those places. And the guys who own it are great. Having said that, I ventured out on an early morning mission today to go resupply before the enemy was on patrol, and they were selling bottles of hand sanitizer for 10 bones.
No, 10
bucks.
Way.
No, they were decent sized bottles of hand sanitizer, but under normal circumstances, that is a $3, maybe a $4 bottle of hand sanitizer, and I can't say I fault these guys.
No, because I mean
these
that's
are boom
the thing.
Times.
That's a little trick I want to tell you guys. Every time we, and of course I haven't been literally out of the house in 10 days, but when this all started, before we were put in quarantine and people were hoarding the toilet paper and it was a whole thing, we went to like a tiny little liquor mart and there was tons of toilet paper. There were tons of paper towels
there. Yeah, a good amount.
Yeah, there was a lot of canned food. There was soap. So if you're Walmart's and your grocery stores, like try and check out a 7-Eleven or like a family owned like little liquor store.
Find a little spot. Now, granted, it is that like Scott's individually wrapped.
Yeah, it's not great.
I hate myself and don't pamper myself in the least because I think that's for weak people kind of toilet paper.
Ron Swanson toilet paper.
It is 100% Ron Swanson toilet paper. Yes.
So we hope you guys are healthy and happy and safe wherever you are. I don't know.
All those things. Wherever you may be. Hopefully you're in one of those countries that's like taking this shit seriously.
Yeah,
you know?
That'd be nice.
For anybody listening in Denmark, congratulations.
Congrats.
You're doing it.
South Korea. Really great work.
That's great. No, you are technically like constantly living in a heightened state of alert if you live in South Korea. So this is maybe nothing new to you.
Yeah.
So maybe you're just a little bit more, well, adapted to being like threat level midnight. But at the same time, for those of us in the United States of America who in our childhood lived in a first world country, the discrepancy between the two is pretty
wild.
We can't even get like consistent messaging as to like what we should do.
No,
I've been told like 10 different things, and I'm not even talking about by you know who. I just mean like by people who like actually should know this shit. Who are like, to be honest with you, we don't know if you should take ibuprofen or not. It's like, oh well, great.
Great. Well,
awesome. Anyway.
Anyway,
and this isn't my podcast, so I don't want to throw my weight around, but how about we dedicate the rest of this episode to getting people to just spend an hour to forget that this shit is going on? You want to talk about some weird shit?
I would love to talk about some weird shit. Today is an episode of, I believe we called the first one DJ Jazzy Joe the Science Bro, and I believe that was just because you did a DJ voice for about 12 seconds.
Yeah.
But this is basically an episode where we are bringing you science news, science discoveries, really great inventions that we don't think a lot of people know about, some tips and tricks from our favorite scientists, all kinds of stuff revolving around science, space, biology, etc.
Maybe we could call this episode DJ Jazzy Joe the Bernie Bro, while everybody in America who kicked Bernie Sanders to the sidelines is now clamoring for socialized healthcare and government stipends and, all of the shit that he's been talking out since he was a mayor in Vermont in the 1980s.
Also, where's Biden?
Hey, good thing we got Joe Biden, though. Joe Biden is in a medically induced coma for one of his 8,000 medical ailments because he's 157 years old and he acts like he's 175.
But that's maybe the last political thing we'll say today?
That is
today?
For sure the
I'm
last.
I'm not sure. I don't know. It depends. I don't know what
the
our stories are going
to
hold.
The word just triggered it in my head and I just had to say it.
Well, I'm going to start today. So this story is scary and kind of sad at the same time, but it must be told.
It must be told.
It must be told. Even though it's my greatest fear. Artificial intelligence scares me every day. According to Laura Sanders, a neuroscience writer for sciencenews.org, she also, by the way, holds a PhD in molecular biology, she says robots are getting closer and closer to feeling.
Come again.
Feeling.
Yeah.
Yes, a robot with a sense of touch will one day feel pain.
Yikes.
And they believe it's going to be both its own physical pain and eventually empathy for the pain of its human companions and potentially emotional pain as well.
That's interesting. Maybe that's a nice like safeguard so that they don't kill
thing.
Us all. We got to give these things souls. We got to give them consciences and souls.
This is still pretty far off, but advances in robot touch sensing are bringing the possibility closer to reality every day. Sensors, this is basically kind of how it's working, how they're building these things. Sensors are embedded in soft artificial skin that can detect both a gentle touch or even a painful thump. And they've been hooked up to a robot that can then signal emotions. This was reported by Minuro Asada at the annual meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science.
Japanese?
Yep.
Naturally.
It's an artificial pain nervous system, and it's a definite building block for a machine that could ultimately experience pain in a robot sort of way,
right?
Which is kind of exactly the same as a human way, if you think about it. Like I always think of the movie iRobot. Please do not run out and rent it. It's not a good movie. But Will Smith asks the robot if he can feel pain, and the robot says that he has sensors that tell him there is pain, which is kind of exactly how our brains work. Like, you can turn that off.
Right.
You can turn off the sensor in your brain, and you won't feel pain. Like, people can...
if you're Ants in My Eyes Johnson.
Ants in My Eyes Johnson, I feel nothing.
He also has a rare condition where he can't feel. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sort of. But like also you can get hypnotized to turn that sensor off.
And then just just like snap your arm.
Well, not that extreme, Joey. Oh. But like they'll put like a needle through your skin and you literally won't feel it.
I'd almost rather have somebody snap my arm.
You won't feel it because that sensor was turned off in your brain.
Crazy.
Because if you think about it, we are literally just brains. Like, that's the creature we are, is like the brain with all the wires going down.
Exactly.
And these are our, like,
bodies. This is the meat case that our brain is encapsulated in.
So it's the same idea. But feeling pain like this, robotics experts believe could allow a robot to empathize with a human being suffering, which, like Joe said, will be a super nice thing when there's a robot uprising.
Sure.
Asada is an engineer at Osaka University in Japan, and they have installed these sensors into a robot named Effeto, which has an unsettlingly realistic child's head.
Why'd they have to make it a child?
It's real. It's rough. Let me see if I can open this for you. I just want to show you.
This is good radio.
I'll post it for the listeners, too. I just want to get your initial reaction.
I just have to comment when it happens.
For this guy.
Ah! Why does he have? He's got like black eyes.
Yeah, they didn't do too much detail on.
Why does he have black? He's got such lifelike hair, and everything is so great. And he's got these, just
soulless
eyes,
like a doll's eyes.
Well, now it's a science news pop up.
Oh, sorry. Well, do you want science news? I can put your email
well,
in here.
Do you
want
to know where I got this article from?
Let me find my place again. Okay, so yes, it's very spooky. And on top of that, these touch and pain signals can be converted to emotional facial expressions.
Oh, so its face is going
so
to like twist
face
and contort?
Twists and contorts when it feels pain.
Yikes.
So that's it's happening, guys.
So,
it's happening.
This
it's
thing
happening.
Is basically going to be like Joaquin Phoenix and Joker. where he's just he's just like aping the human emotions he sees around them. Oh, we're laughing.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, great.
And it's also a Japanese boy. Yeah. Nothing scary about that.
They're using a soft touch sensitive material as opposed to a rigid metal surface because it allows richer interactions between machine and world. If anyone's seen Ex Machina, you know what I'm talking about. Except for like none of the weird sex stuff yet that I know of. It allows the possibility of engagement in versatile and intelligent ways. And I love how Asada and his team are making robots empathetic to physical and emotional pain. The reason that they're doing it is because it would be a valuable skill in the future for robots designed to, say, help care for elderly people.
Oh, yeah.
And understand their limitations and understand the anguish that they're going through as well. But then me and you are like, maybe they won't skin us alive if they know what skin feels like.
Maybe if they know the human condition, they won't decide to just, you know, with zero emotion whatsoever, wipe us from the face of the earth.
Yeah. Anyways, robots sensing physical pain is right around the corner. Robots feeling internal pain, hurt, turmoil, or even joy is a whole other story. We've got a while before we get there.
Wow.
Yep.
Gotta be honest with you.
Not a fan?
I'm one of those. Listen, and it's weird because I feel like this is definitely like a.
Here's the thing, it's coming.
I feel like this is a viewpoint or an ideology that is more often than not associated with more conservative people. But I just like I don't have that awe or that like eager anticipation for what the future holds. I feel like it's pretty much just bad stuff. Like, if you're going to just dress up, you know, a fully, like, automated robotic future, but, like, you don't have to turn your own key in the ignition of the car, you know? Like, it's like just, how like, hard it, if was you, turning like, just dress that up, it's like, I don't know, it's not that hard. It's not hard to do that.
Yeah.
It's not hard to flip a light switch.
Yeah, those commercials where it's like you're driving on your way home and your car will signal your house.
You're like, Alexa, turn the lights on.
And it's like, you could just turn the lights on when you get home. Like, yeah. I don't understand
and that's great. And Alexa will turn your lights on. And then while you sleep, Alexa will turn off your carbon monoxide detectors and make you and your family asphyxiate in your house. But hey, at least you didn't have to walk in and flip a couple light switches.
I know. I'm the same way. I don't even know. I think you said it right when you say conservative thinking people as opposed to just like older people, because I've kind of always been that way where I've never been excited for the newest iPhone.
Never.
Because the new iPhone means that my old iPhone is going to start being a piece of shit.
Yeah.
That's all that a new iPhone means for me.
I got my first iPhone the year I moved to New York City. Mm-hmm. So I got my first iPhone in 2007. And a month ago, I got my third iPhone.
Yeah.
So that tells you everything you need to know about how willingly I embrace technology. I'm going to be honest, though. Like, you know, not to turn my nose up too much. I'm also like kind of a fucking idiot. I'm also right. Like completely, I don't know. It's like a chicken or the egg thing. It's like, am I scared of this stuff because I'm not good at it or is it the inverse?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Am I not good at it because I'm
am I not good at
it
because
it?
I don't fucking care yeah. about it, or do I not care about it because it's fucking stupid? I honestly don't know. I just know that I have problems with everything.
True.
So at the end of this episode, after I finish bad mouthing technology, maybe I can crowdsource some things I have problems with, and you guys can respond to Ashley via email, and you can help me, you know, like find where the fucking flashlight icon is on my new iPhone. Maybe you can help me with that.
I remember the day that you texted me that. I had sent you a text message and you like didn't get back to me, and I was like, guess you don't love me anymore. And you were like, sorry, I can't turn my flashlight off of my iPhone. I was like, ask Siri to do it. And it worked.
And it worked.
Luckily.
It's the only time I've ever asked Siri to do anything. That's it. Siri, turn off flashlight.
Turn this off, please, for the
love
of God.
I'm blinding everyone in this room.
I'm going to do another one.
Do another one.
I'm going to do more of a biology story.
That'll be a perfect segue into mine.
Lovely. Okay, so this one's pretty gross, but it's an important advancement in what experts are thinking is an evolutionary leap. which is cool.
Okay.
So this took place at the University of Oxford. An evolutionary biologist, Natalie, but with an H? Natalie? Or would it just be Natalie?
Where's the H?
After the T.
Natalie.
That's what I thought too, but I was like, that's a weird spelling. No offense, Natalie. Like, I'm sure you're a very nice person.
Listen, if your name, your name is Nathalie, take it up with your folks.
We're gonna say Natalie. We're gonna say Natalie. If it's wrong,
feel free to yelp about it.
Not our fault. So Natalie Finer was working in one of their labs there, and she was trying to understand how the common wall lizard is adapting to a changing climate. Like, that was actually what she was studying. And that's already pretty cool. But as she was observing one of the eggs under a microscope, she saw that something was moving inside the egg.
Okay.
And discovered the very first recorded event of its time. She had found a parasitic worm that can move from a mother lizard to her embryos.
Yo.
That is something that, it's something that parasites moving across generations, that has been well documented in mammals, but this is the first evidence of such a transmission in any egg-laying creature, birds, reptiles, etc.
Sure.
No idea about platypus. Those are mythological. I don't understand.
Platypus
them.
Is a mammal.
I know. That's the thing.
Right.
Would that count? I don't know. Naturally, all these science geeks had to say is this opens up a whole new set of exciting questions. I don't know about exciting. Scary questions, maybe. Like, what the fuck is in my eggs that I eat every day for breakfast?
The reptile eggs that you eat every day for breakfast?
No, but it's all egg-laying animals.
Just so being a smartass.
Reptile. Yeah. Well, Nathalie. Natalie Finer's team collected and dissected hundreds of eggs from 85 female wall lizards captured from 6 different places in Italy, France, and England. Of those, the parasitic worm showed up only in the eggs of some lizards from the French Pyrenees.
Interesting.
So,
okay. They're mountain lizard parasites. Okay.
Mothers of the infected embryos also carried the parasitic nematodes. So the mother also had the exact same parasites that were found in the embryos.
Still had them.
They still had them. So it's like they're reproducing in the bodies.
Yuck.
Nematodes typically reside in the gut and the rectum of their hosts. These guys were found in the ovaries of the lizards. As many as 16 of them were found swimming freely between the follicles in these lizards' reproductive system.
I'm making a stink face.
Yes. For those listening at home,
I'm making a very genuine subconscious stink face.
This, of course, is what makes it possible for them to infect the embryos as well. The fact that it's in the reproductive system. Especially with reptiles or birds or crocodiles or snakes or turtles, etc., the eggs actually begin to calcify inside the mother at a very early stage. And that protects them from things like parasites, which makes me feel good about my eaten eggs.
Yeah.
The hard shell.
At least there's that.
In lizards and snakes, however, the process of the calcification only begins after a particular stage of the embryo brain development. Like, after that's complete, it's a little bit longer down the road than a chicken.
Okay.
So that delay in forming the shell is like the perfect window for these worms to infiltrate and get into the little babies.
Little bastards.
The cool thing about this parasite is that it doesn't hurt the lizards at all.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for calling them bastards.
I know. It doesn't.
I jumped to conclusions. What can I say? I'm a hothead.
Don't judge a book by its cover.
Don't judge a nematode by its cover, I guess.
It doesn't damage the baby lizards or the mother lizards. Experts think that they have just co-evolved so that the nematodes can survive and thrive in the head, and the lizard doesn't mind.
It's going to be fascinating if and when we find out that it's actually a symbiotic relationship, that they're actually serving some purpose from the lizard's perspective.
Mm-hmm, maybe.
Maybe they're like real smart.
Possibly.
Because they got extra nematode IQ.
Yeah, because like right now they're just as far as we know, they're just happily coexisting. Like, you know, because there's a lot of shitty parasites out there, ones that like go into a fish's head and eventually push its eyes out and totally control its movement and brain and just live as the fish now.
What?
Look at me. Look at me.
Look at me.
I am the fish now.
I am the fish now.
Yeah, they like grow. They get in the fish. They get in their heads, push out their eyes, it's become
like,
the eyes.
It's like being fish Malkovich.
Exactly. Or there's those the parasites that get into ants and control their bodies and make them climb as high as possible.
Those little bastards before they explode out of their heads.
Yeah, and so their spores
like David Cronenberg movie style. Yeah,
their spores can just float into the world.
Yuck!
And
so they just keep doing it.
Like those guys are the bastards.
Yeah, real bastards.
These seem fine.
Real invasion of the body snatchers, bastards.
But in the end, these researchers determined that for nematodes that live in the gut, it might not be a very big evolutionary step to move to the ovaries. So that's not a huge step in evolution. That's a pretty easy,
it's a quick jaunt.
Let's head over to the ovaries.
Just a quick stroll down to the ovaries.
Better. But researching this further is going to help answer questions about how and when these worms evolved and whether or not the mom to egg transmission is unique to this population or if it's happening across like many species of reptiles. Finer finishes her article by saying that this parasitic lifestyle might actually be much more common than we thought before. It's just that there are not many people who are looking into the brains of embryos. Of reptiles.
Only Nathalie.
Only Nathalie.
Only Nathalie works alone.
The only one. So I thought that was pretty cool.
No one wants to work with a scientist named Nathalie. Well, that actually wound up being a pretty perfect segue into my story.
Lovely.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Me too. 18, baby.
Thank you, George Papard. So I want to talk about the African turquoise killfish.
Whoa.
Yeah, sounds cool, doesn't it?
Sounds dangerous.
If I refer to it as ATK henceforth, you've been notified. So, my story, we're gonna take a little trip. We're going to go to the seasonal ponds of Zimbabwe and Mozambique.
Fun! Yeah. I would love to go anywhere right now.
Yeah, right? I know. So, in the seasonal ponds of Zimbabwe and Mozambique lives a fish that can pause time.
Whoa.
And now I will pause for dramatic effect.
So dramatic.
Who talks during a dramatic pause?
That was a very long dramatic pause. How am I to know when it's going to end?
All right. Well, I will bury the urge to do another dramatic pause to fix the first one.
I'm sure maybe at some point in this story you'll find time to do another dramatic pause.
If this was my podcast, I would pull the plug right now. I would.
I'm gonna unplug your microphone.
I'd have a real Bill O'Reilly Inside Edition. Was it Inside Edition that he was, or hard copy?
What do you mean?
His like, fuck it, we'll do it live.
Oh my god!
It was Inside Edition or hard copy. It was some 90s trash television that my mom and I used to devour wholesale when I was growing up. So, in any event, the African turquoise killfish, when in its embryonic state, see what I mean? Perfect segue, can halt its development during a state of suspended activity called diapause. So, the dry seasons in this particular region of Africa dry out these seasonal ponds for months or even several years at a time.
Wow.
So, these fish have evolved to a point to where they, as still as embryos, they can pause their own development until the rains return and the ponds once again form.
How is that even possible?
Moreover, recent research has shown that functions such as cell growth and organ development are also put on hold, which effectively means that the embryos don't even age while they're in this state of diapause. A two-week-old embryo can go into diapause, and then when it emerges, it's still 2 weeks old, however long has gone by. It, like, pauses time.
So you're telling me.
Wait a minute.
You're telling me.
By your logic. Yes, that is.
So if we study these, we could stop our own aging.
Do you want to just do the rest of the story
go on.
Then? Or do you want to maybe let me have my own story? On this. I don't have to come on the podcast anymore if you don't want me to.
Joe, this quarantine has got you riled up.
Yeah, well, it's also made you step all over me, so I guess we're even. You're listening to it live, folks. This is the dissolution of our engagement. It's happening over the airwaves.
Ten.
At least it's good radio.
True.
At least we're going
out
as true entertainers.
Everyone loves drama.
We're like Lindsay Buckingham and Stevie Nicks. Yeah, yep. We're just breaking apart for the world to see.
This is our rumors.
Yeah, this is it. So there's over 130 species of mammals, let alone fish. Mammals. There's 130 species of mammals that have some form of diapause. Okay. Right? So think of bears hibernating. That's a form of diapause, mm-hmm. right?
Or those, remember those frogs that like freeze themselves?
Yes, exactly. Same exact thing. But it's the fact that the African turquoise killfish are able to cease aging entirely.
Yeah, that's wild.
While doing so, that makes this truly astounding. So nature finds a way. So adult killfish only live for 4 to 6 months. That's their entire lifespan.
Aww.
Meaning that the vanishing ponds don't pose like really that much of a threat to an adult killfish. It might cut you 2 months short, you know? I guess if your whole lifespan is 5 months, losing 40% of your life kind of sucks. But, you know, at the end of the day,
you're not a fish.
But, you know, for the survival of the species on the whole, this trait has become paramount. So though the average lifespan for these fish tops out around 6 months, like I said, their embryos have been observed putting their growth on hold for up to 2 years until the pond refills with rainwater.
Oh, it's
rain
fish.
And flood water.
So...
So
that's right.
Once they hatch and they become fish, they live for 6 months. But as embryos, they can put themselves on pause. They can hit the pause button for 2 years.
I forgot about eggs. That's why I was confused. Yeah. I forgot the fish laid eggs. Yeah. I was like, how could the embryo exist if the parents are dead?
Because it's an egg, baby.
It's an egg.
So Dr. Anne Brunet, who is a geneticist at Stanford University, not a big deal, pretty good school. So Dr. Anne Brunet is a geneticist at Stanford University, pretty good school. She is working diligently along with her colleagues to learn more about exactly how the killfish do this on a sub-embryonic level. She and her colleagues have discovered that diapause does not affect an adult fish's ability to reproduce, nor does it decrease its growth or lifespan. So
nothing.
Literally no negative repercussions whatsoever for pausing, for doing this. It's just completely built into their existence.
That's amazing.
Now, furthermore, what was once thought to be just an entirely passive, boring state of diapause has since been disproven. So it's not just simply like, you know, hit the pause button and that's it, you know. Genes responsible during diapause, the genes responsible for organ and cell development and metabolism as well are shut down by the embryo. However, genes responsible for turning on and off other genes, as well as genes responsible for maintaining the muscle to physically stay in diapause, are not only turned on, but they're actually cranked up. So it's like energy gets diverted from cell and organ growth into... It's a miracle of evolution. It is absolutely mind blowing. It gets to quote Spinal Tap, they go to 11. they crank that shit. So continuing to learn more about how the external signals trigger the diapause, as well as the minutia of the process itself, could have really large implications for us humans in the future. Dr. Brunet herself, a little foreshadowing for you there. Thanks, Ashley.
You're welcome.
Dr. Brunet envisions a scenario in which continued research on the subject could lead to breakthroughs in treating aging-related diseases, such as Alzheimer's, as well as learning how to better preserve human organs long-term. So if that is true, if it can be converted to a human scale, if we are able to learn enough and put it into practice before we or a virus wipes us from the face of the earth, if we are able to do that, and if we're able to do that at the same level as the African turquoise killfish, humans could stretch their estimated lifespan from the current approximate 80 years to anywhere from 160 to 400 years.
Goodness, we're like Moses.
Again, yeah, yeah, because that's how it used to be. People back when everybody ate, you know, like one fish every 3 days and walked everywhere. And didn't have access to any form of medicine whatsoever.
Drank only water and wine.
Drank only, like, you know, malaria-laden water and bad wine. They lived to be 400 years old. But, yeah. So, if we are able to convert this, it could have major, major implications for us. But even if it does have any implications for us, because I got to be honest with you, I've kind of lost hope and faith and like the will for our species to persevere. It's still pretty amazing that the African turquoise killfish can do this. Even if we can't replicate it, so what? It's amazing.
That is amazing. I'm constantly, Joe and I watch a lot of nature shows.
We do.
We like nature shows. And every single time we do, there's at least like three times per episode where our jaws are just on the floor and we're just staring at each other instead of the TV as it like, did you know that before now? Like, what were we watching? I don't remember if we were watching something or if we were reading about it. The jellyfish that are, that live forever. What's the word for living forever? Live forever.
Immortal?
Immortal. The immortal jellyfish.
The theoretically immortal jellyfish.
Well, no, what happened? They will not die unless they get eaten, obviously.
Yeah.
They get eaten or like horribly injured, or if they contract some parasite or disease.
Right.
But what happens is they will, when they reach a point where their body doesn't function anymore, they basically dissolve themselves and start over.
It's insane.
So they essentially can live forever.
Yeah, the jellyfish is basically just like getting rid of like their like 1996 Honda Accord. They're like, you served me well, Bessie. Got 320 thou out of you. But the old girl doesn't purr the way that she used to. It's time to maybe upgrade in the automobile front.
Hey, remember that time I couldn't think of the word immortal? Do you remember?
Yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah, those were good times.
That was a really good story, Joey. Thank you.
Why, thank you very much. I try to come prepared.
So my next story involves a whole lot of shit I don't really understand, but I'm going to give it a shot here trying to explain it all to you.
Godspeed.
And you, and you, and you, and you. So this was reported in February of this year for the first time ever. Astronomers have found molecular oxygen in a galaxy outside of the Milky Way.
Ah.
Oxygen, as in the same stuff we
As in our lung juice.
Lung juice. Oxygen is the third most common element in the cosmos after hydrogen and helium. So astronomers once thought that oxygen would be totally common in the space between the stars. But despite years and years of repeated searches, no one has ever found any sign of oxygen beyond our galaxy until now.
Crazy. It's a big discovery.
Huge. Junxi Wang, an astronomer at Shanghai Astronomical Observatory in China, along with his colleagues, spotted the molecule in a galaxy named Markarian 231. It's 560 million light years away in the constellation Ursa Major. Now, how the fuck do you even do this? How do you find a molecule that's 560 million light years away?
You got to have real good eyesight, I would
really
assume.
Really good eyesight is number one.
By the way, do you know what Ursa Major, means the Great Bear.
Great Bear.
Great Bear, like big, like great in size. Not like great, like he's a swell guy. Like it's a big bear.
Really nice bear got there.
Yeah, Ursa is Latin for bear. Uh-huh. And Major, obviously, is, you know.
Great, big,
great, grand, large. Yeah,
wow.
Exactly. Yep.
What are the other names?
I'm happy it was Ursa Major because it's the only one I could sound smart about.
Fair enough.
Be like, why do they call it the Little Dipper? It's like, I don't know. Read a fucking book. What do I look like? A fucking scientist?
Listen.
I don't know.
Just because I'm the science guy.
I don't know.
On this
I'm dressed
episode.
Like a house painter right now. I ran out of clean sweatpants this week, so I'm wearing old, ill-fitting suit pants because they're lightweight and super comfortable, along with an unbuttoned flannel shirt and a baseball cap because I really need a haircut and I can't get one because a hair salon is essentially a fucking death trap. So I don't know. I don't know what they're called, Ashley. I can't even fucking bathe. This virus is tearing us apart.
So they used radio telescopes in Spain and France. And the astronomers saw radiation at the wavelength of 2.52 millimeters, which apparently is a signature of O2's presence.
if you say so.
I know. That's what I said. I was like, I don't understand this, but this smart guy's telling me it. So I'm going to believe him. Not only is this the first time we found oxygen outside of our galaxy, it's also the most molecular oxygen ever seen outside of the solar system.
Wow.
This is where it gets kind of more sciencey and hard to understand, but they don't really understand why there is so much oxygen there yet. So previously, astronomers had seen oxygen in just two star-forming clouds within the Milky Way, the Orion Nebula and the Rho Ifuci cloud, which is a dark nebula of gas and dust that's located 1 degree south of the star Ifuci.
What was it? What is this one? What is it? Like, what kind of a cloud is it?
Dark nebula of gas and dust.
That sounds like me after I finish a bag of Doritos Cool Ranch. That's not that impressive. I mean, I'm capable of producing that.
My favorite thing about you eating Cool Ranch Doritos is the fact that I have to go in the other room.
Seriously, we have to form like a quarantine zone within our quarantine zone whenever I crack a bag of Doritos Cool Ranch, because they are without a doubt on like the greatest hits album of chips and various assorted snacks of all kind. Don't at me, Cool Ranch. They're like what's
they're
I'm trying
delicious.
To think of. They're like
they're
cool,
delicious.
Cool Ranch is like the Chinatown of snacks. It's like iconic. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to mention them.
Do you know what they're called in other countries?
Yeah, they're called like it's like American style.
Cool American.
Cool American. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's it. But yeah, they are every bit as stanky, both in the air and on one's breath as they are going down. Delicious going down. They are amazing, and they will also cause friction in your personal relationships.
So they believe.
So anyway, back to the thing I keep interrupting.
Sorry. They believe that the shortage of interstellar oxygen is actually due to oxygen atoms and water molecules freezing onto dust grains, locking up the oxygen, and then there's no signature to trace it. That's why they believe that there's such a lack of oxygen in space, as opposed to helium and helium and what was the other hydrogen, because oxygen can freeze, like oxygen can connect with water and freeze, and then you can't trace it because it's no longer in the molecular oxygen form.
Oh wow.
So that's what they believe. But this signature they reported finding last month is interesting because the oxygen signature is like 100 times greater than in the Orion Nebula in our solar system. Gary Melnick, an astrophysicist at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, commented on it saying, "That's very, very high. There's no known explanation for an abundance of molecular oxygen that high."
Really quickly, can I pause and interrupt again?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. But just where this guy works, the fact that it in one sentence you said the words Harvard, Smithsonian, and astrophysics, and it's just like you can't, like no three words are smarter than that. It's like, where do you work? I work at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics.
It's like, oh, okay. All right.
Well, I'm going to go fucking kill myself.
I'll never be you.
All right, great. Well, anyway, do you? Can I sell you some insurance?
Yeah. Do you need life insurance? Yeah. Do you need disability?
Yeah.
So their biggest guess as to why this is that it's been a result of the galaxy being a major star factory. This place spews out stars. 100,
just like American Idol.
Just like American Idol.
One after another. Ruben Studdard. You name him.
Kelly Clarkson.
What was the other one?
Clay Aiken.
Yeah, Clay Aiken. I was gonna say the one that Conan O'Brien used to make a joke about every single night for 4 years. That one.
I think he was in the same season as Studdard.
Ruben
though.
Studdard. Yeah. So, and he didn't even win. Ruben Studdard. How do I fucking know this? I've watched zero seasons of American Idol.
Right, but like that.
That's
era?
That's what a star factory it is, baby.
See?
Even I know.
So this place. Spews out new stars 100 times faster than the Milky Way and is shooting out 700 solar masses of gas per year. So the high-speed gas from the galaxy's center might slam into the gas in the disk of the galaxy, shaking water ice from dust grains so that molecular oxygen can form. And in turn, that oxygen may be what's keeping the galaxy hyperactive with all of the star building.
Man, that's wild.
That's their best guess.
Hey, whatever. I just like talking about this stuff. I don't need you to have any answers right now. Just knowing that that people are working on this is, in a way, kind of reassuring.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's like at least some people still care about this shit. At least there are still some people in the world who care about learning
stuff. Yeah. And reporting on the learning.
I don't have any more time for learning. Make a device where I could turn my TV on and also have a big slide that goes into my mouth so I don't have to reach for my food.
Joe's still mad at technology right now.
Joe's mad at everyone and everything right now.
I just want to end that story with, what is space and how do they know this stuff? Like, how did they first even like discover that they could find that out?
It's crazy.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, stories like that for me personally, they're always a little bit of a double-edged sword, because like I just said, on the one hand, it's like really reassuring that there are like absolutely just like mind-bogglingly brilliant people who are capable of step-by-step figuring this stuff out.
Yeah,
like I said, like I couldn't find the flashlight app on my new iPhone, mm-hmm. you know, and that's the other side of that double-edged sword, where more often than not, I mean, you know, the fool doth think he is wise, and the wise man know himself to be a fool and all that. So I do walk around with a healthy amount of humility in that regard most of the time.
Right.
But I also kind of feel like, hey, my pursuit of knowledge over the years has made me smarter than, you know, like
the president.
Most, let's set the bar a little higher than that. I feel like, you know, if you took most of the people on the planet, like the majority, I don't mean like 90%, I mean like at least 51%, I'm mm-hmm. smarter than them. And mm-hmm. I feel really good about that. But also, stuff like this comes out and it's just like, oh my God, I'm like not even a smart person. I'm just like not a total moron.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like I know a thing or two about a thing or two. And then as you go up the ladder, from me, you continue going up and then you get to like actually smart people.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple friends like that, though. I have friends where I just think about what they do and it's just like, oh my God, Kevin's so much smarter than I am. It's crazy. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You got another one?
Totally. I do, but I would like to hear what you
have.
Want
me to go next?
Yeah, all right, absolutely. I'm gonna go next.
All right. So this is, I'm going to have a little fun. Now, disclaimer, I was having a little difficulty. I was having a little trouble finding something that was both compelling to me mm-hmm. and something that I felt was fodder for the podcast.
Right.
But I succeeded.
Yes.
And it's a little dumb, but we're going to have some fun because I feel like we could all use just a little bit of just like no frills, no strings, fun. Yeah. Just like comfort food, mm-hmm. you know, like putting on
Cool Ranch Doritos.
Like sitting down with a bag of Cool Ranch Doritos and watching an entire season of the show Friends. Like, I don't want to think. I don't want to do anything healthy or good or beneficial. I just want to let the comfort wash over me so I can forget.
So are you telling me that this is sort of a Joey's Derp Corner?
Derp Corner, Derp Corner, Derp Corner. Yeah.
Cool.
Awesome. So I wanted to compile a small list of a couple inventions.
Love it.
Like more modern, not like brand new, but okay. like recent, and not just inventions that you've maybe heard of, like one or two of these.
Okay,
you know they're pretty fringe. Now a couple of them I love, mm-hmm. and then a couple of them I don't love. So we're gonna start with the loves.
Okay.
So the first one, the butter stick.
Butter stick. The I butter feel stick. Like we've had that for a while.
The butter stick?
A stick of butter?
Okay. Well, here's the thing. It's not a stick of butter.
Oh, okay.
It's not a stick of butter. It's like the glue stick that you would use in elementary school. It's like one of those, except instead of using it to like adhere a cotton ball to a wooden tongue depressor to make a cloud man.
You laugh, but we all did it. One more week, and you and I are going to make it.
We're gonna be doing arts and crafts. I'm going to be getting googly eyes and tongue depressors and cotton balls.
We're going to be so fucking bored.
We're going to have a blast. So it's a butter stick. So instead of using it for craft projects, you use it to spread delicious butter onto a tasty
Amazing.
Piece of bread. Right. So long, cold butter problems. You're a 20th century problem. We have moved. This is one area where technology is moving in the right direction. Yeah,
because when you try and spread butter with like a knife, you like rip up the piece of bread.
You tear up the bread, or like, you know, like maybe the bread
is... You piss the toast.
You piss the toast. You know, maybe the bread is, you know, like fragile. Yeah. Maybe it's fragile bread. Yeah. You know, maybe you've got super cold butter. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you going to do? You can't spread that.
No.
What are you going to do? I guess you could throw it in the microphone, but then maybe you put it in for too
microphone.
Long.
Microphone.
And you put it on the microphone and you speak into it. And then the microwave. I had a stroke. I'm sorry. You know what I mean? So the days of me taking cold butter packets and squeezing them in my hand to warm them up so I can spread them on a tasty
Over.
Piece of 7-grain bread. They're done.
Because
I got butter stick, baby.
Love it.
For the record, once upon a time when I was in high school, I only used this one container of it. It did not go well at all. But so I'm almost 35 years old, for those of you listening at home, which I don't know how that happened. But way back when I was in high school, it became very popular to have like spiky hair.
Yes.
Like
spiky,
was in.
Hard.
It was like spike.
Hard
when I
rock.
First got into high school, the style was like short hair, mm-hmm. and then you would comb it forward from the back, but you put the wall up front.
Yeah, yeah.
Build that wall, mm-hmm. you know? You'd have a wall going straight up in front with the hair going down in front of it. But that then over the years, as I like, oh, now I'm a junior in high school. Now it's like, hey, that's when
hair.
You get like, you get a bunch of fucking, you know, like $3.99 for a gallon plastic bottle of gel and you rub it in your hands and you spike that shit. You know,
all
you
of
just,
it.
You, it's going into all different directions. You're just, you're,
and you just,
you're Mr.
You look
Spiky.
Like, you look like Matthew Lillard.
You look like you have HPV. Is what you look like. You look grody.
It's not a good look.
It's not a good look. It
never
wasn't
was.
A good look back then, but I was 16 and I didn't know any better. But if you were like me and you were 16 in the year 2002, or actually I was 16 in 2001. Wow. Oh my God. So if you're chasing that look, there was a wax stick.
What?
Where it was like hair product, but it came in like glue stick form. And it enabled you to like whoop, 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 whoop. You
so
could
you
like get
individual.
Like individual strands of hair and
wow.
like whoop, 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 whoop. But it didn't work well.
Oh.
In theory, it was great. But you wound up just rubbing a bunch of it onto the palm of your hand and rubbing your hands together anyway. So it was like, I'm not buying this again.
Did you tell us that story to say that you're wary about the butter stick?
I'm wary of things that are imitating the glue stick. Because as we all learned when
general.
We were 5 years old, the glue stick is perfect.
Yeah, for sure.
Perfect.
Also, you think of like a glue stick. Remember those suckers, the push-pop suckers?
Fuck yeah, I remember. I just told you how old I am.
But those kind of sucked because your saliva would like drip down.
Drip all
in.
Over them. And now you got rainbow coming out of the corners of your mouth. And
glue stick shape.
Yeah.
Too.
Also, like there are few things in the world that like make my stomach turn more than like a little kid with a dirty face. You know what I mean? Like a baby with a dirty face is adorable. Like a 6-year-old with a dirty face. It's like, where's your mother?
Where's your mom?
Like wipe your, I know you're 6, but you can't feel that. Wipe your mouth. Look at you. Look at you.
Okay.
So anyway, yeah, kids with the dirty push pops are not a kid's best friend.
No.
No. Go get a rocket pop. Those are great. Mm-hmm. You know, do you remember the baseball gloves? It came on a stick.
Okay.
And it was like a big pink baseball glove. That was that was the ice cream cone. And then in the middle was the baseball, but the baseball was a gumball.
No fucking way.
You don't
way.
Remember those?
Nope. Oh. I never had one of those. What flavor was it?
Anytime you would hear, honestly, it's been like literally 25 years since I had
remember.
One. That has sadly faded to black. But Do 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 do. Little 8-year-old Joey Oakes hears that song coming down the street. I'm not even putting a shirt on. I'm going straight from the slip and slide. I'm going, I'm running on hot pavement, barefoot. Doesn't matter because I'm going to get that baseball glove.
For sure.
That was it.
That was it.
What were we talking about?
What are we talking about today?
Let's just talk about ice cream
trucks.
Yeah. So that's number one. That's okay. Invention number one. I'm going to give
on the love list.
I'm going to give the butter stick the benefit of the doubt. I've been burned in the past, but I love the idea. I love the concept. I'm on board.
Okay.
Invention number two. I'm going to call this the sneaky sandwich bag.
Oh.
So are you sick of taking the time to fix yourself a tasty homemade sandwich to bring to work at your office job, only to have some thieving scumbag piece of shit steal your sandwich out of the refrigerator and not even have the decency to own up to it? Well, you don't have to worry about that anymore.
Because you have a sneaky sandwich bag.
No longer. Because you got sneaky sandwich bag. You know what this sandwich bag does? Doesn't really do anything.
Yeah,
I don't know why I said what it holds your sandwich. You know what it looks like, though?
What?
It's got these like perfectly placed, hideous green blotches adorned all over the plastic of it, so it makes your sandwich look moldy as fuck, like it's been in the refrigerator for a long ass time.
I feel like this could backfire because
somebody's gonna throw it out.
Yep. Every time I'm at work and I open the fridge and it stinks,
I didn't even think of that.
I don't remember this Chinese food being in here yesterday, but it fucking
disgusting.
Smells. So
nobody's
going to
eat this. And meanwhile, Roscoe's sandwich is going in the garbage for the third day in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to come in with an AR-15 tomorrow.
Okay.
So I changed my mind. Guess what, sneaky sandwich bag? You're done.
You're done. You're out of here.
You're done. If this is Shark Tank, I'm not. No. Mm-mm. I've never seen Shark Tank, but I know the gist of the show. I'm not investing in that product.
No.
Negative. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Wow. I was really asleep at the wheel on that one. I wasn't even thinking of that. I've never had an office job.
True. That might be your downfall.
Maybe that's it.
That's it.
If I did have an office job, I might want this next thing.
Why? What is it?
Do you have an office job that
yes.
steals your soul every
yes.
hour of every day?
Yes.
Or maybe you have a good job. But
also,
maybe you
yes.
also enjoy potent potables a little too much to wait until happy hour comes around.
Oh, shit.
Well,
is it a stapler flask?
You feel like drinking on the job, do you? Because this company's got you covered. You know how they've got you covered?
How?
Flask ties.
Oh, my. See, this doesn't work
this
for
is
me,
it.
Though. I'm a lady.
Shark Tank. So what? Avril Lavigne, that shit.
Yeah,
you could
guess.
Be Avril Lavigne. Come on. You could come into work looking like fucking Diane Keaton and everybody would be like, oh my God,
right.
Ashley, you look incredible. And they'll have no idea you're half in the bag. Yeah,
you're right.
It's perfect. So not only are these ties chic and stylish, but they also hold half a pint of whatever you feel like swallowing down your gullet so you can forget even for just a few hours of how disappointing your life has become.
Well, how do you drink out of it?
It's got a little the tip of it.
Uh-huh.
Basically, it's like a little like camelback kind of thing. Absolutely remarkable.
Do you remember the time that I dressed as? Well, I don't think we even knew each other at the time, but I've told you this story.
So no,
you couldn't. The time
yeah,
I dressed as
Doctor
Doom.
Doctor Doom and from Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? And everyone thought I was Diane Keaton.
To be fair,
I did look like Diane.
But here's the thing: you didn't look like Diane Keaton in a movie. You looked
right.
like Diane Keaton, like on the cover of Us Weekly in 1993.
Yeah.
Where it's like, First Wives Club star Diane Keaton strolls out and about with her co-star, Bette Midler. You know, you looked like Diane Keaton off camera.
Yep.
You
She's
know?
A cool girl.
She is. It was the glasses, really. Was
the glasses.
Like, the glasses,
really
the vest,
it.
The tie. I would have thought Diane Keaton.
Well, I was Judge Doom.
Yeah. So it's funny because, you know, I thought about this, you know, drinking on the job. Now, me personally, I struggle with drinking on the job. There have been times where I've, you know, because before I did what I currently do, I spent a very, very long time working in hospitality.
Yeah.
Drinking
on the job is for anyone
almost
who's never, I was going to say, for anyone who like has never worked in hospitality, your server is drinking.
Almost everybody drinks.
Yeah.
But I never could because I get like 4 drops of liquor on my tongue, and my brain goes into like, fuck these people. Like, that's it. I smell alcohol and I lose the ability to help people in a restaurant. I'm just like, fuck you. I don't know. Get your own fucking Bellini. So the only time I've ever been able to successfully drink on the job was my first restaurant job in New York, because I had to work every Sunday brunch.
Yes.
And I was 22 years old and I had just moved to New York City.
So Saturday nights were for parties.
Tuesday nights were for parties, let alone Saturday. I would get out of work on Saturday night at 11:30 at night. And I would go to a bar for like literally 6 hours after that.
That's insane.
I would do a little more than drink. Not my finest age. But I would basically get an hour of very, very, very bad sleep. And then wake up and put on my work clothes again and get back on the subway and go back to work a brunch shift. I basically would just work a busy dinner shift at a very expensive, nice, high-pressure restaurant, drink and do drugs for 6 hours, and then...
Sort of nap?
And then, like, basically just, like, close my eyes for an hour, and then open them and just go back and just do it all over again. So I would drink at that job, but getting back to drunk was actually like a step up on the usefulness scale from how I showed up to work that day.
Yeah.
Like, I needed that. It was like, get, I'm just going to pound 2 screwdrivers right when I get there, and that'll buy me a couple hours before I pound a couple more screwdrivers and then finish my shift and then go home and die. So
every Sunday.
So yeah. So if you feel like, you know, aping my style and drinking on the job, maybe the flask tie is for you.
Mm-hmm.
You probably don't have a fully stocked bar at your disposal in your office. So flask tie.
Right.
Yeah.
This is totally irresponsible of us. Go on.
Peddling flask tie.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. If you are listening to this and you or someone you know in any way, shape or form is associated with flask tie, I would love a free sample.
I would love,
For the promotion of this episode, just one. Just give me one flask tie, please. And then here's this is a twofer.
Okay.
Of things that I thought were ingenious, but maybe not too funny, just really great ideas.
Uh-huh.
You ready for this?
Yes.
The double capped tube of toothpaste. A cap on either end.
Oh.
How brilliant is
that? Why don't we have that?
Why?
That is so brilliant.
A cap on either end. It automatically mitigates your squeeze and pull tactic by at least by 50%.
Yeah.
Incredible. Here's another one for you. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Staircase drawers. Explain. Every stair on your staircase is a fully functional drawer that pulls out.
That's such a good idea.
That can store whatever you want to store in a drawer.
You know what doesn't help us, though?
No stairs?
Yeah, we don't have any stairs.
Yeah. We will, though.
Someday
we'll have stairs again.
Can you just buy a set of staircase drawers? Because we just put one in the corner.
Like fake doors on Rick and Morty?
Fake doors!
Okay, that's two Rick and Morty references.
Too many.
All right, so now I got two inventions.
Those are your loves.
Two inventions that I hate.
Oh, no.
Invention number one, the hug me pillow.
Oh.
It is a pillow in the shape of a human, specifically a man. But it's a pillow in the shape of a man's torso and arm. So
just one arm?
Just one arm. It's like for snuggling up to.
Right.
So like you're going to get all snuggled up to this guy and like, I don't know, I guess now you don't have to adopt that 15th cat that you were thinking of adopting. You know, this is just taking the weighted blanket concept to a degree that is just kind of, I can't wrap my brain around it. Just embrace the loneliness. Just embrace it. So, like, the greatest art the world has ever seen has been made by people who feel like you. Channel
That's
it.
The thing. It's like rock stars are awesome, and then they get wives, and they suck.
Yeah, exactly.
For the most part.
They get money, and they get, you know, comfort. And they get, you know.
They get reciprocated love.
Yep. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, wow, you forgot how to write a song.
Yeah. True. Fuck this pillow.
Embrace it. Embrace the loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
You think Vincent Van Gogh had a fucking hug me pillow? No.
If he did, he might have kept his ear, though. That yeah. is
and,
a
and
plus.
Nobody would know who
and no
he
one
was.
Would know his name. You're yeah. right, Joe. You're right.
I know I'm right. So in the picture I saw, the damn thing's even wearing a button-down shirt.
That doesn't even make sense. Oh well, but, I guess men's pajamas sometimes have.
But this was like, it was like a very like basic, like teal with white button-down shirt. So like I saw it and I was like, that's from Express for Men. Like I could even tell what store this fucking shirt they put on this goddamn pillow was from. So yeah, that just instantly rubbed me the wrong way. And number two, leashes for children. So first of all, I'm going to be serious for a second because I'm about to get like a little hyperbolic and a little dramatic, as I have a tendency to do, especially when I get a little worked up. So just let me attach this disclaimer. I do not want at all to diminish the fear of losing a child.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I get that. I understand that sometimes we take our children into crowded environments and it's easy to get separated. Like, I understand the mechanism that would make a person think about creating
child
this device.
Yeah.
Yeah. Designing it is maybe, in my mind, a bridge too far. Buying one is like you are off the fucking reservation. So, for starters, children don't go on leashes, okay? Animals go on leashes.
But they're harnessed. It's not like it's around their
it's
neck.
It's a leash. Just because it's not around their throat doesn't mean that you don't have a child on
a leash.
And
they're disguised as like a monkey on their back.
Listen,
and the
my
tail
job
is a leash.
My job takes me from school to school, week to week. Uh-huh. I work at a different public school every week. Most of the schools that I work at are elementary schools, which all have kindergartens. They've all got the rope. When they're all walking to recess,
oh, yeah,
or when they're all
the
walking
rope.
To lunch, they're all holding on
I
to
love
the rope.
The rope.
It's adorable.
It's so cute.
There is a big difference between being responsible for 20 children
yeah.
who are not yours.
True.
And also just being too fucking sidetracked by Swarovski crystals to pay attention to your fucking kid while you're at the mall.
That's true.
There is a bit. You have a fucking kid. You have
pay
a kid.
Pay attention to the kid.
Hold on to the kid. Hold on to the kid. Make the kid walk in front of you.
The kid has hands.
But no, you're going to demean your child by putting them, you know, like there are long standing emotional repercussions that are going to come from having your child on a harness leash. Like that is, imagine if you, when you were 7 years old,
uh-huh.
6 years old, because kids tease each other at that age. Imagine you're at the local mall and you bump into two kids in your class who are there with their parents. Who see you on your leash.
Wait, hold on.
You're going to
People
be...
People are putting six-year-olds on leashes?
Fuck yeah.
See, I've only seen them on like three-year-olds at like Disneyland who are like, I want to walk, Mom.
No, they're going on like kids who are in grade school.
Okay, that's insane. That's actually insane.
Yes, it's insane. It is absolutely insane. But also, lad, just to put a button on the kids on a leash thing, I kind of feel like it's like a rite of passage to get lost as a kid. Like, I remember one time I got lost, you know, and again, you know, I get it. You don't want your kid to get kidnapped. I understand that. But, like, I learned a very valuable lesson. I was visiting my uncle in the greater Washington, D.C. area, and he took me to a mall because he had to go do something, and he put me in an arcade, and he gave me, like, $5. And he was like, I got to go do this thing. Stay here. Don't leave. Don't go with any strangers. I'm like 8 years old in this story. 9 years old. Stay here. Don't leave. Here's some quarters. I got to go do this thing. I'll be right back. Don't leave. I burned through my 5 quarters for like 4 games because I was never very good at managing my money at arcades. And then I finished and I was like, I'm bored. I'm going to go look for Uncle Ben at this mall that I've never been to in a state I don't live in. And I wandered off and went looking for him. And of course, I got lost. And we finally like were reunited like 40 minutes later. And Ben grabbed me by the front of my shirt. This is my mom's older brother. Grabbed me by the front of my shirt, picked me up to like face level and pinned me against the wall with like heart attack seriousness on his face. And guess what, valuable lesson learned. Pay attention, do what adults tell you to do when you're 8 years old and stupid, and don't go wandering off at a mall. You don't want to get lost, you don't want to get kidnapped, stick with your parents.
For all the children listening
for all,
out
for
there.
For all our 8-year-old listeners out there, I apologize for the F-bombs.
I have one more thing. This
hey,
is...
lighten the mood, too.
Yeah, Jesus, like, Joe.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I did not mean for that to go as dark as it did. But it's just, that's one of those things where it's like, Joe, what makes your blood boil? It's like, 6-year-olds on leashes because their parents are lazy.
Well, this is not really mood lightening, but no one's going to get angry, I don't think.
Do you think somebody's going to get angry at my leash take?
No, you were the one that got angry, not someone listening would get angry.
Who knows? I might get angry again.
True.
I'm good at it.
So I found an interesting article on livescience.com. I wanted to share it with you because I actually have asked this question before, like in my head to myself, and I've never known an answer. So this is kind of cool and also a little terrifying. The question is, what should we do if a planet killer asteroid is heading straight for Earth?
I mean, I feel like we already solved this one, didn't we?
Didn't we?
You go get Bruce Willis?
Yes.
You go get Ben Affleck?
Mm-hmm.
You go get...
Who else is on the team?
Will Patton.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Michael Clark
Steve
Duncan.
Buscemi.
Steve Buscemi.
Yeah.
Michael Clark Duncan. You got to get Liv Tyler because she's got to...
She's just got to sit in the
control
room.
She's just got to be there. Yep.
And cry.
Yep. You got to get... Who else we got to get?
Well, there's that one guy who always plays an asshole in movies, but he's not an oil driller. He's like one of the astronauts that goes with them because they have to send astronauts with them too because these guys are not astronauts. They're oil drillers.
It's William Fichtner, isn't
yes.
it?
Yeah,
yeah,
that's his name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Scott Jungbauer is very proud of me right now for pulling that one out. Scott, I know you're listening. I know you're proud.
So here's the thing. No, that's actually a bad idea, and I'll go over why.
Okay.
So... researchers at MIT calculated which options are best, and it all depends on the path that the asteroid is taking through space.
Uh-huh.
So there's several different scenarios.
If it's coming from here, do this. If it's coming from there, do this.
They actually came up with an entire guide, which was published in February in the journal Acta Astronautica.
Cool. Can I get a coronavirus test?
Acta Astronautica? I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. Which they hope will serve to help future asteroid deflectors. So in the future, they're hoping that this guide can be a reference if something like this is happening. So in movies, as we discussed, asteroids heading straight for Earth is sort of like a last minute shock. Like we have 3 weeks before
it
hits.
We had no idea this was happening.
And we need to send a team of oil riggers up there to blow it up.
Yep.
This will probably never happen. NASA believes that they have already spotted most of the largest and deadliest objects that have even a small chance of striking the Earth. Like they already know where they are.
So what,
in space.
So why was there such a colossal failure in the movie Starship Troopers?
What do you mean? Oh, the
asteroids are coming all the way from Klendathu.
Right, I'm getting to it.
Oh, okay.
So they know all of the these are the planet killers. These are the ones that if this asteroid hits us, the planet's dead, we all die.
Dunzo.
But there are definitely smaller rocks that could hit and destroy like cities. But we may have not discovered those yet because they're just too small to detect from that far away.
Uh-huh.
But the planet killers, the one that's like, we're all dead, we know where they are.
Can I make some suggestions for some cities? Mm-hmm. If asteroids are listening and they want to know where to land, I've got some cities where you could go land. Okay.
Tampa.
I've never been to Tampa.
Oh, okay. I just thought one of them would be in Florida for you.
I mean, I don't know. Where do the Florida man guys live? Because they're friends of ours.
Oh, true. Yeah. Okay. No, stay away from Florida.
Yeah.
We got friends there.
You're lucky, Florida. If it wasn't for the Florida man on Florida man, you'd be toast.
You'd be toast.
St. Pete, you're done. Orlando, you're done.
Clearwater,
Miami,
see
you're the first one done.
So, because these planet killers are already being closely watched, we're going to have plenty of time. They already have a way of tracking their projection by using what they call keyholes, or some people call them doorways. And basically, every Earth-threatening asteroid gets closer and further away from Earth at different points in its orbit around the sun. So sometimes they're closer to us, sometimes they're further away, sometimes they're closer, sometimes they're further away. And along that path that they're traveling near Earth, they've calculated keyholes or doors. So those are regions of space that this asteroid will have to pass through at certain times in order to end up on a collision course with us.
Mm-hmm.
And the easiest time to stop an asteroid from hitting Earth is before it enters one of the keyholes. So if we see that it's like in 2 weeks,
nuke the sun.
It could nuke the sun.
Nuke the sun. That'll take care of it.
Yeah. Well,
orbiting around. What are you going to orbit around now?
Yeah.
Now where are you going to go?
So if we destroy it before then, that's going to keep the object from even getting on the route towards us in the first place. So that's what we should do.
So what do we do?
Well, so Sung-Wook Peck and his co-authors of this guide tossed out most of the crazier asteroid deflection schemes. Like, they left nuclear detonation as the most serious option. Like, we will
die. If we don't do this, we're already going to be extinct anyway.
But we might die, too, because nukes are scary in space. We don't know how they're going to react. Like, only if absolutely necessary, because we have no idea how an asteroid would even react to something like that. Because why would we test it? That would be very dangerous.
Yeah.
So in the end, it looks like we have three options. All of the options are to knock the thing off course.
Right. To just give it a bump.
Boop.
Little nudge.
To not hit us.
Just a little nudge with a, 50 megaton payload of missiles. Yeah.
So these are type 0, type 1, and type 2 is what they've labeled these. And they're very, there's a ton of info, but I'm just giving you, the basic. Like, type 0 mission is where a single heavy spacecraft is fired at the incoming object, aimed using the best available information about the object's makeup and trajectory to knock it off course. Because it's still pretty far from us when we do this.
Right.
So we don't actually know the exact size, the topography of the asteroid.
Right.
So type 1 missions is where a scout is launched first and collects close-up data of the asteroid.
Unmanned, I'm assuming?
Unmanned, before the main impactor is launched in order to better aim the shot for maximum effect. Mm. And then type 2 is a mission where one small impactor is launched at the same time as the scout to knock the object just a bit off course. And then all the information from the scout and the first impact are used to fine-tune a second small impact that's going to finish the job, if necessary.
Interesting.
There are problems with all of them, honestly, depending on the situation. Type 0 missions are very risky because telescopes on Earth can only gather rough information about the asteroids, the planet killers, which are still very far away, very dim, very small objects to view. So without precise information on the mass, velocity, and physical makeup, we could end up fucking ourselves over big time.
Yikes.
By doing that. Type 1 missions are, type 1 and 2 actually, are most likely to succeed. Type 1, because we can get all the information we need. We can determine the mass, we can determine the velocity, but type 1 is going to take up way more time and resources, and we may not have the time, and who knows what the world is like at the time, we might not have the resources to do 2. Type 2 missions are possibly the absolute best, but they, again, will take even more time and resources than type 1 to get underway. So I guess it depends on how much time and money we have and resources to get this thing done, which option we would choose.
I don't know. I feel like if we keep up at this rate, the answers to those questions, time and money, are going to be none and none.
None and none. So,
first one, hopefully. So cheers.
Lucky for us, these researchers even took the time to develop a method for calculating which mission was best based on, 1, the time between the mission start and the date the planet killer will reach its keyhole, and 2, the difficulty involved in properly diverting that specific planet killer. Moral of the story, though, is don't throw nukes at asteroids and keep the oil drillers at home. Because we should not do that.
Not to mention, I don't think I could handle, losing Bruce Willis for real.
I can't handle losing him twice.
I already lost you once.
I already lost him once. Remember the scene where he's saying goodbye to Liv and she's in...
Oh my God, she's in Mission Control.
He's staying.
I know. And he's doing it. So she can be with Ben Affleck.
And they didn't even get along. You didn't even think that Ben Affleck was good enough for her.
But he is.
Because he makes graham crackers dance on her belly.
He was the son that Bruce Willis never had.
Do you have anything more to say before we wrap it up?
I don't. Just crying. And also, I got to be honest with you. This chair that I sit in when we record gives me the sweatiest back. Speaking of the sun, the back of this chair must be made out of the sun because
so dramatic.
It's just my back is a river right now. It is just awful.
And you haven't showered. How long has it been?
I showered yesterday.
Oh, okay. That's not too bad.
Yeah.
I was just referencing the fact that you said that you're hygiene.
I know, but I'm getting on top of it. I had my my initial sticker shock, oh my God, what's happening to the world? I already had that week. Now this is the new world order. I'm adjusted to it. Mm-hmm. Don't touch my face. I get it. I know. I can bathe. All right, I get it.
Well, that's all the time we have left this week for Keep It Weird. Thank you so much for tuning in. We really hope that you are happy and healthy and safe wherever you are, and that you really do reach out to us if there's something that we could do to help you through this time of isolation and anxiety. Because if anyone knows anything about anxiety, it's me. It's me.
In the first 10 days of this, since we went into actual lockdown mode, it's very easy to kind of lose it a little bit.
Yep, we both have had a minute. Days.
We both have had moments where the situation and the inability to really do anything about it, just the long-term financial prospects, let alone the health issue, and it's
the chainsaw that's been going outside of our bedroom for 3 full days.
That guy's lucky. He's nice. I'd stick that chainsaw where the sun don't shine if he weren't.
Or where the sun do shine, right in his back.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, where the sun do shine, because he cut down the fucking tree outside my bedroom window. So my point is, it's very easy for this to kind of get on top of you in a moment. If I can just pass on any advice from a person who is excitable, to put it mildly, just let it pass. Don't fight it. Just let it happen. Get it out of your system. Try to not take it out on the people around you, because they're in the same exact position as you. If you got to go scream into a pillow, if you got to go do a bunch of push-ups, if you got to go for a run, if you got to do a bunch of, mountain climbers in your house because you don't want to go outside, whatever you got to do, just allow it to happen. Get it out of your system. Try to be good to the people around you.
And yourself.
And just know that someday, this will make for a hell of a story.
Yeah.
So just hunker down. Genuinely just try to be good to the people that are stuck with you while you have a meltdown. Don't beat yourself up for having a meltdown. We're all frustrated and stressed out and worried and feeling the squeeze.
Really, really take advantage of the time to get some little things done that you didn't have time to normally, or...
Reach out to some people that you're friends with that life has just, for nobody's fault, you've drifted apart from for the last 5, 7, 10, 30 years. However long it's been, send them a Facebook message. Mm-hmm.
One thing that's really been helping me too is keeping a strict schedule every day. Every morning I wake up at 7, or sometimes before, I wake up at 7. I usually wake up at 4:45. So this is sleeping in for me. I wake up at 7. I work out. I shower. I put on human clothes. I might brush my hair. I might put on makeup. Sometimes I don't. And then I try and be productive during the day. And then at night I can do my usual relax with my fiance on the couch. But keeping that structure has saved me, because my anxiety, Joe, even on weekends, I'll be fine Monday through Friday. Saturday will hit. I have a panic attack.
As soon as you have nowhere to be and nothing to do, all of a sudden it's you get paralyzed by the options.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if anybody knows anxiety, it's Ashley Cassidy. So I would take her advice to heart. It's coming from a good place.
Yeah.
So let's just do our best to wait this out, be safe, be smart. Let's let this thing die out. We're going to starve it out.
Right? Yeah.
That's what we're going to do. We're going to encircle the city, and we're not going to light any fires. We're not going to kill anybody. We're just going to make sure that COVID-19 doesn't get resupplied with any food, and we're just going to starve it out.
Thank you, Joey, as well, for joining me today.
Thank you.
I imagine you're going to be joining me a couple times in the future, too.
Probably. And also, if I can drop just a little hint without going into too much detail, listeners, I will be returning for another episode of this lovely podcast in the not too terribly distant future. And just to tell you, I am very, very, very excited to talk about what I'm going to talk about. So we'll just leave it there.
Oh, a little teaser.
Oh, a little tease.
Love it. I love that tease.
A little fluff.
All right. Follow us on social media at Keep It Weirdcast across all platforms. Check out our Etsy page at www.etsy.com/shop/keepitweirdpodcast to look at some of our merch we have, and keep an eye out for some really amazing new merch. I just ordered some samples, and as soon as they get here and we get them greenlit, they're going to be going up on our Etsy page as well. If you'd like to donate to the show and get a newsletter and a bonus episode every single month, as well as a discount on merch, head over to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/keepitweirdpodcast and donate to our show. Not sure what we're doing next week, but I'll keep you guys in the loop on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. So, again, follow us there at Keep It Weirdcast. Joey, what should our sign-off be today?
Don't touch your face! For God's sakes, don't touch your face!
And keep it weird.
Malkovich. Malkovich! Malkovich! Malkovich!
Malkovich, Malkovich,
Malkovich, Malkovich.